A62. Number 1B.
All right. So, what is this new paradigm for approaching God for problem solving? Mr. Zeddy's key word is understanding. Mr. Zeddy therefore asks us to understand reality and urges us to study the book in order to understand its principle. Understanding is a term that for many hundred times appear in those 600 pages. So she didn't ask us to consider the text of the textbook inspirationally or through meditation or through listening to the text and all these things which are purely mystical in its approach. She asked understanding. This is her keynote. But she also says that we must be aware that principle does not interpret itself through isolated ideas, through solitary ideas, which means something quite terrific, which will occupy our thoughts for the next 2 weeks over and over and over. Namely, that she shows that the new paradigm of understanding is not an atomistic understanding, that it is not understanding isolated facts, isolated truths, that isolated truths are true, but that they are not scientific truths. This is hardly understood by the majority of Christian scientists. They feel because the textbook contains the truth and that every statement in the textbook is true, they feel that if they understand a sentence, therefore an isolated truth, that would amount to scientific truth. And this is not so. This must be seen clearly, or we are not really working along a science. Even a parrot can state that 2 times 2 is 4, and he's right. And if he states it, he says a truth. It's a statement of truth. Does it work? No. Does it work universally? No. When is a truth a scientific truth? A truth is only then a scientific truth when it is seen within the whole system of that subject. Only when I see, say, in arithmetic, the whole system of arithmetic, the whole numeration table, so to say, then I can say that 2 and 2 equal 4 is for me a scientific truth because I understand it in the environment of the whole system, not as an isolated statement. Now, this is the point. You may think this is very theoretical or academic or I don't know what, but you will see that we don't get anywhere until we accept that fact, that every state, every truth, small t, every truth, is only then a scientific truth, when it is seen in its relation to the whole. To the whole. So that we see more and more that we must be aware that all this atomistic thinking that is going on in Christian science does not amount to scientific thinking or scientific awareness. Now, this is rudimental that we should never forget. And we can always measure any writing or any statement when we measure it according to this standard. Is it the statement that is atomistic, or is it a statement that is holistic, meaning Is it a statement that shows its relationship to the bigger whole, to the whole system? Which means something more, which means therefore that our investigation must investigate that system of reference, that divine system of reference, those three great categories of being, in a structural way and not in an atomistic way. Because structure means that the facts are related to each other so that they constitute a coherent whole. That's structure. So a structure is always that which is engaged in relationships and is not so much engaged in isolated truths or datas. This is the big point. If any student grasps this fundamental new paradigm of approaching reality, he has made a terrific shift in his consciousness and therefore is looking to the textbook in a completely different way than before. And those who are here for the next week, I will show them through the text then, going through the text of creation, especially the chapter on creation, and show that only when we read the text structurally and not atomistically, that the text yields its treasures. So we better make up our mind already today that we can see that the garment of Christ cannot be rent into pieces, into isolated little pieces, but that we must have that garment with it, which is without seam and rent, that is always whole. That therefore we are approaching every subject always from a structural point of view and not from a isolated, atomistic point of view. So if we see that, I think we are on safe ground, and we have, so to say, a basis from which we can work and which will give us a much broader sense of everything. All right, therefore, what shall we do? What is the purpose of our study? We can see that the purpose of our study is not just to study. It's not just a question of to study a lot. Some of the students say, oh, I have done a lot of study on it. I have spent a lot of time on the study. Yes, that's all right, but this is not the main point. If we give a lot of study on an old paradigm, on an insufficient paradigm, we can study our head off and won't get anywhere. We have to see that we are using the best paradigm that is available, the best method that is available, and give to that our attention. Which means method is always that which determines success. It isn't the amount of time, the amount of hours, the amount of thought that we put into a subject that matters, that is determining our success. It is choosing the right method. And the right method may demand less time, less effort, and may have a 10 times bigger success. You know my old story, we are really at the point where we can enumerate them and just say, you know, my story is set number 7 and my story number 11, and then we laugh. But I repeat it again, you see, if we want to flatten a hill, well, we can use various methods. We can take our spade, and send perhaps 1,000 laborers with a spade and say, now, get going, flatten out that hill over there. Huh? And it may take them perhaps 20 years until they have accomplished it. That's the method of a spade. But we can also say to a dozen of people, here is some dynamite, go over there and blow it up, and they may do the job in a month. Or we can say to another 3 or 4 people, here you have a few clean atom bombs, and you clean up that place in a day. The success is the same, but the time that has taken is different. Why? The method is different. So the development of the scientific thought through the ages is a question of finding out better methods in order to arrive at the same thing. If today we would have to build a pyramid, I don't think we would use the method of the Egyptians, and we would perhaps be able to do that whole job within, a month or 2 or 3. It's method. Well, that's the same with Christian Science. If we choose the wrong method, well, the effect is very small. But if we do choose a higher method, a better paradigm with which we approach the subject, well, the success should be bigger. So, we were trying last time really to investigate that first category of the divine system of reference, namely the synonymous terms, through the method of definite rules. We first established certain rules, you remember, and you had those rules on the syllabus assignment number 1, that would give us scientific criteria for investigating the 7 synonymous terms through the textbook, which leads in a much quicker way to a reliable answer than if we do it in the old paradigm of inspiration, where we know that the whole field of Christian Science has been studying those 7 synonymous terms over the last 100 years, by the thousands, by the millions, and have never arrived at the conclusive conclusion. Can we say conclusive conclusion? Huh? At a reliable conclusion. It has never arrived. Why not? Because their method was not scientific. It was inspirational, it was speculative, it was emotional. Whereas we tried the method of definite rules, and within a few months, I think everyone was more or less able to study all the 7 synonymous terms in the textbook and arrive at definite conclusions. So that we have to see that we are aware of using the right method. Yes. Now, the last syllabus class was mainly, therefore, concerned with the analysis of the 7 synonymous term, so as to find the true concept, the most perfect concept that is possible of what characterizes each of the 7 synonymous terms, and we were making a list of those ideas that were characteristic of the 7 synonymous terms. So the syllabus 1 had its main tone on concept building, on finding out the true concept of each synonymous term. That was our main achievement last year. And this year we will put the accent on blending these ideas, blending our findings, the blending of ideas. This will be practically the overall subject of this week's work, so that we not only know what are the elements, the clear elements of the divine nature, but also how can we blend them or synthesize them again into one. And therefore we will have to find also the method, the right method of blending ideas and synonymous terms with each other. This will be our assignment for this week. If we have done that, then we have only arrived at the point where we have our tools. Not more than that. So that with syllabus 3, I think we then can start using our tools. So every artisan, he must first have the right tools. If he doesn't have the right tools, he can't really work properly and he's inefficient in working. So the most important thing is in Christian Science that we first get our tools right. And our tools are here the 7 synonymous terms plus the way how these 7 synonymous terms really blend with each other, how they go together. How do they go together? That's the great question. And this great question I want to present again, I have indicated it in earlier talks, by just talking a little bit about the subject of the synonymy principle. The synonymy principle is one of the great, great inventions of Mrs. Eddy. It has never really been recognized in its bigness until we have really studied the synonymous terms and could find out what a terrific instrument we have in the synonymy principle. What does it imply? Let's think that out again. Mrs. Eddy gave us a new science, the Christ science, or Christian science, the term may be. A new science usually introduces new terms, a new language, a new terminology. And Mrs. Eddy, too, had somehow to introduce a new terminology. Now, in other sciences, one usually does it like this, one goes back somehow to the Greek or to the Latin and then builds up terminology from the Greek or from the Latin and coins new terms and says, here it is, this is what I understand under that new term. But Mrs. Eddy couldn't do that because she had to deal with life, with human experience, with the very nature, with the very experience of life, and therefore she had to use and make use somehow of the human language as it exists. When the science introduces new terms, they have to define their terms. Physics, you have to define what you mean with this and that and the other. In chemistry, you have to define what you mean with this and the other. You have to define your terms. But defining means to set boundaries, to set limits, to set bounds. But that is the very opposite of the subject. The subject we consider is the infinite. That which has no limits, no bounds, which is not limited. And so Mrs. Eddy was in a rather difficult position. How could she explain the infinite through limited terms? Because every term in the language has its definition and therefore is limited. This is quite a problem. And we'll see that problem coming up again and again and again this week in all sorts of ways. That terrific problem, the infinite on one side and the human language to express it that is limited and has limited concepts and only has limited concepts, has no unlimited concepts. And this is the great question. Also, a science is only possible on the ground of differentiation. We cannot have a science on a subject that is completely amorphous as an amorphous whole. Science means that one can break up a subject in more and more and more differentiation of that subject. Therefore, the more we can analyze a subject into its parts, which means the more we can differentiate the parts within the subject, the more a science thinks it can see through the subject. It can understand it. So this method of analysis is actually breaking up the whole into parts. But in the science of being, where we have a subject that says, I'm the infinite, and I'm the whole, and I'm the all, and I'm the only, and there is nothing besides me, it seems that there is nothing besides me, you cannot differentiate anymore. This is a great philosophical question that the mystics were already facing. The mystics solved it in this way, that they said, science is not right. You cannot get hold of the infinite through science. You have to drop science. And the mystics said, therefore, you have to drop more your differentiation until you are just one with the whole. And you lose your individuality and are absorbed in the infinite one. But science is the only way to understand. Therefore, Mr. Zeddy, giving the science of the infinite one, somewhere we're in that awkward position of defining, which means defining, making finite what is infinite. Can you see the problem she was facing? How can man, through finite terminology, describe that which is infinite and never finite? And here she found a solution, no matter if she was aware of it or not, that I don't know. But she found a new way which is absolutely unique, which you don't find in any other science. Namely, the synonymy principle. The synonymy principle does what? It says, terms are in a certain way absolutely equal. They belong to the one and the same thing. And in various aspects, they differ. In other words, she could see that she could take the infinite one and break it up without breaking it up. Namely, by breaking it up in seven synonymous terms, and by breaking up in seven synonymous terms, she could give seven aspects of what? Not of seven different things, but seven different aspects of the one being. You see? Whereas in any other science, when they begin to analyze something, they break it up and do no more consider the parts within the whole, but as parts per se, Whereas synonymous term, those seven synonymous terms, they all relate to the one being always. Always. And therefore, by analyzing the one through the seven, she does not, through the seven, describe seven beings. Seven isolated beings. She could therefore stay with the Infinite One and just could say, you know, the Infinite One can never be broken up in parts. It's indivisible. But I can describe that Infinite One through various aspects. And that variation of aspect of the One, that variation is a distinction, is a differentiation. And that enables me, through that differentiation, to build up the signs of God, the signs of being. Without taking away the concept of wholeness. That's her solution to the problem. And we therefore see, when we go through these various exercises, that we can see we must be aware of this very big fact that we never leave the Infinite One. And if we keep that in mind, we can see that the exercise we can make, no matter where we are in the whole system, in the whole blending, will always be about the Infinite One, never about a part of the Infinite One. It will always be the Infinite One itself. So, can you see how she solved that problem? See, it's a terrific problem. On one side you have the One, and on the other side the Many. The Many. Because only through the Many we can see differentiation. Or there will just always be that nirvana sense of just having an amorphous whole, no individuality, no experience, no individual experience, nothing individual, nothing that is new. You see? In the mystical Infinite One, there is never anything new, never an individualization, because individualization means differentiation, distinction. So, here, through the seven synonymous terms, we have the One, God, and the Many, the seven synonymous terms, and yet they don't contradict each other. She has found a way of how the One and the Many do not contradict each other. Or you have on the one side the whole, and on the other side the infinite differentiation. Spirit individualizes, classifies, and diversifies all ideas. Huh? You have on the one side the whole, and on the other side the infinite diversification without contradiction. Because it's still built on the synonymy principle. That's a big thing. She could see. On the one hand, you have that the seven synonymous terms are freely interchangeable, because you can say God is mind, but you can also say God is spirit, you can also say God is soul. They are freely interchangeable. On the other side, they are not freely interchangeable. Can you see the apparent contradiction, huh? The very opposite, but through the synonymy principle, there are no more contradictions. They blend, that's why the blending comes in, they always blend all the time with the Infinite One. And this is really the great point.